performance by Roots Peruvian Folk Dance. So go check that out. And if you can't make it tonight, go check out the exhibit at some point, because it's really, really great, and it runs until next January. This is... and you can find out more information about all of that at moa.ubc.ca. Okay, we'll be right back with some more talking, but of course we're going to hear a little bit more local music. This is Antarctica 2005, just a little bit south of the Andes. Bye, buddy.
Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Rosie Kasongo, program coordinator for the VIF, a new dialogue network funding program. Rosie is from the Democratic Republic of Congo and now lives in the Greater Ottawa area. Rosie spoke about the VIF program, how being multilingual can help us build empathy, and her love of French rap music. Here's our conversation. Rosie, you are the program
coordinator for the VIF program, a new program for French-speaking youth being delivered by the Dialogue Network. Can you tell us about the VIF and its goals?
So the VIF program is stemming from the Government of Canada 2023 and 2023 8 Action Plan for Official Language through Canadian Heritage. And the VIF program, which stands for Programme de Valorisation d'Initiatives Francophones, it's in French. But in English, it's going to be like Francophone Initiative Promotion Program, as its main objective to fund initiatives that provide young people aged between 14 to 13 with opportunities to come together, to exchange, to support one another and engage in French in person. So the activity must be in French, they must, and the activity must be in person, and it's for youth between 14 to 13 years old. And like I already talked about before the M, but I'm going to just, you know, say it in detail. The first one is to bring together young people through activity in French to strengthen their linguistic security and sense of belonging. The second one is to create exchange with youth from different linguistic communities to foster cooperation and appreciation of Canada's official languages. And the third one is to increase support for the learning and use of French in daily life, especially for youth whose first language is not French. And the last one is to encourage youth participation in civic and social engagement in French. This program, we have two streams. The first one is for organization, and the second one is for immigrant for youth-led activity.
The VIF microgranting program starts soon. What projects are eligible and who can apply?
Yeah, for who can apply, I'm going to say that to be eligible for this microgrant, youth must be between 14 to 13 years old at the time of submitting the application, to be legally authorized to work in Canada, be a Canadian citizen, permanent resident, or a person who has been granted refugee status in Canada. And to the youth must agree to be matched with a non-profit organization of your choice, which will be responsible administering the fund and supporting you, supporting the youth in implementing their project. And what kind of activity? First of all, the activity must take place in person, must take place in Canada, must be conducted in French, and must target youth age between 14 to 30 years or a specific age group within this range. And the activity must demonstrate a direct link to the program objectives, and the activity must be complete no later than March 31st, 2027. And what kind of activity must be... This is an example, so youth can just, they can be other type of activity, but the activity can be a discussion on a topic of the choice of youth, a discussion circle, and film screening, and, you know, and after that, like a discussion, a book club, and podcast lunch, like this, and a workshop and conference. Sport activity, creative workshop, culinary workshop, networking event, open mic nights. Like, it can be like different type of activity, but it's up to the youth to choose what kind of activity and what kind of, you know, with the objectives of the VIF program, you know.
About you, what languages do you speak, and how and why did you learn them?
Okay, I speak French. I speak French. I think I learned French, my gosh, since I was a little baby. You know, it's not my first language, but it's not my second one. I'm like, you know, yeah, something that I have a weird relationship with French because I speak it. Since I was a little baby. After that, I speak Swahili. It's my first, you know, my mother tongues, because I'm from Democratic Republic of Congo, and so I speak Swahili, and I learn it at home, but also in school, because until I think the first, until until I think like the first part of my classes, you need to learn to speak Swahili, but like the literature one, you know, how to say this word, like, yeah. And I speak Spanish also. Yeah, I learned it at school also. And I have the chance to have many friends from who speak Spanish. And so I practice too much and have some conversational classes until now. And because I really love Spanish. And I travel a lot, like in Spanish country, because I just want, you know, to practice and to know more about their culture. I can say that I speak a little bit Japanese, but not too much, because I love manga. And I learned the first one. I think I'm level one in Japanese, the basic one. But I can have a conversation again, you know, introduce myself and ask for something, but I need to practice more. But I don't have the chance to do it. And I speak English also, and I learned that at school also. And after that, I just practice, you know.
So when you were in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, you learned Swahili, Spanish, French, and English?
Yeah. I don't speak Lingala, one of the languages in Congo, but I listen. So I can understand when someone speaks Lingala, but I'm going to just, you know, respond in French or in other language. But I can, you know, I have a big accent in Lingala. And I was scared when I was young, because every time I try to speak Lingala, people just, you know, talk about it and say, you have an accent in Lingala. So I think I didn't have the chance, you know, to practice, because I feel how people gonna just laugh about my accent. But, you know, maybe I'm gonna try again to do that.
How has speaking more than one language enriched your life?
I think it's amazing. Like, because one of the things is that I have the chance to have many opportunities to read different kind of books. You know, sometimes when I go to in the library, I'm going to just see, okay, do you have this one in French? If they don't have in French, I'm going to say, which language do you have? So I can read books in different language. I can listen music in different language. And I think that the fact that I speak many languages helped me to be, you know, I don't know, like to be more sensitive, you know, because I know that it's not my first language. Like, I'm afraid to speak, like, when I can speak English, but, you know, sometimes I'm afraid to say some word, because I'm like, is it the pronunciation right? Or, you know, so to know that, to experience that, help me to understand when other people speak another language, because I'm like, okay, maybe they have an accent, maybe they don't say the word as it should be, but they speak one language that I don't speak. So they can speak French, English, Spanish, or Vietnamese, or other language, things that I don't know. So I'm like, I'm more sensitive and more understanding, and I'm so proud to, you know, I can switch this language. Last year I was in Peru for my holiday, and when I went there, you know, I speak Spanish, and after that, just, you know, when I come back at the airport, I was like, some people was struggling because it was the first time to be in Canada, and that was like, oh my gosh, you know, can you tell me where is this kind of things? And I was like, oh yeah, I can do that for you, because, you know, I speak French and Spanish and English and Spanish, so I can translate it for you. I can help you in this kind of things. And even when I'm in Peru, same thing, you know, I can be there and, you know, speak Spanish without, you know, without the fear to do it. And maybe sometime I'm gonna ask people if I need some really good translation, you know, something like, I don't know, I can ask, but I can do it by myself, and I'm just so proud to do that. And it's kind of a thing that people should do that.
So, of course, the theme of this year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie is activate your Francophonie. How do you activate your Francophonie in your everyday life?
Okay, I'm going to say I work in French, but not only my work, but I love French rap. French rap, like, is lot. I think the music is one of the things that I love the most. Then French rap and podcasts. I have like a list of podcasts in French only, and music also. I think I listen more French rapper music than English one or Spanish one. So I'm gonna say that, and I do activity in French, like. To go in theater or museum, you know, in French, and I had the chance also to have my friends, and we have like a book club, a French book club. So we see each other online, and you know, we read together and talk about the book that we read before. So yeah.
So of course, March is the month of the Francophonie. Do you have special plans to celebrate?
Yeah, because we're gonna have the lunch. We're gonna launch on February, so I'm like, okay, you know, it's kind of a thing. But after that, we have I'm gonna have, you know, there are too many things to do in March, and I hope to go everywhere I can in Ottawa, even in Quebec, because I have the chance to have my family in Quebec, so sometimes I just go in Quebec. But I think the Rendezvous de la Francophonie on our website, there is a calendar of activity that's going to happen in March. So I'm look forward to see that. So I'm going to just, you know, see what kind of activity I can do. But I think it's going to be like more theater, because I love theater, or something like, you know, discussion or music team. I don't know yet, but I look forward to see the calendar of the Rendezvous de la Francophonie and to go see what's going to happen in Ottawa, even in Quebec, or I don't know, maybe in another city, if I have the chance to be in another city. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Catherine, for the invitation.
That was my conversation with Rosie Kasongo, Program Coordinator for the VIF, a new Dialogue Network funding program. Find out more details about the VIF on the Dialogue Network's webpage. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in.
Birds make a lot of sounds, so many that author and illustrator Becca Rowland had a hard time keeping them straight. Then they began picking up on familiar noises in common bird calls, like when Becca heard a dog's squeaky toy in the trees.
And I remember that exact moment of hearing that noise and knowing immediately in my soul that it was a northern flicker. It's so satisfying to make that connection in your brain and just know the answer to that.
Now, Beck has written a guide called Bird Talk, hilariously accurate ways to identify birds by the sounds they make. The entries are both fun and functional.
If it sounds like a truck beeping as it backs up, it's a red-breasted nuthatch. If it sounds like someone enjoying a fireworks display, it's a common eider. If it sounds like a weed whacker, it's a rhinoceros auklet. If it sounds like wiggling a piece of aluminum siding in the air, it's a Gunnison sage grouse.
All jokes aside, Becca hopes their book can help folks appreciate the birds all around us.
Birds were just background for me, and when I was out and about, I wasn't paying attention. I am super paying attention now.
Want to join the fun? Start at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Nice Cloud by The Magic Triangle here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Thanks for hanging out with me this hour. We're going to wrap up with a story from Danny about a rally that happened this Monday in Vancouver. And Democracy Now! Will be on right after that. So thank you for hanging out, and I'll see you next time.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. A swarm of umbrellas crowded outside of Vancouver Centre MP Hedy Fry's office on Monday morning, March 16th, and the people under them were there to express their concerns surrounding Alberta's Bill 11 or the Health Statutes Amendment Act, which passed in Alberta's legislature in late 2025, would serve to create the legal framework for a two-tier medical system in the province. While these changes would be limited to Alberta, concerns have been raised about the precedent that such a change to the medical system would create for other provinces and provincial governments. In response to the concerns raised around Bill 11, the BC Health Coalition organized a rally outside of MP Hedy Fry's office, where they urged the long-standing Liberal Party member to have the federal government stop the bill from being enacted. Hedy Fry was in attendance and gave a speech expressing her disapproval of Alberta's Bill 11. Similar rallies were organized by provincial health coalitions across Canada that very same day. CJSF attended the rally, and we were able to speak with some of those in attendance, as well as the rally's organizers and speakers. This included Cleo Lake, co-chair with the BC Health Coalition and SFU Masters of Public Health student, who we spoke to about the importance of the rally for them.
So we're here today because Alberta's Bill 11 is an existential threat to our public healthcare system, not only in Alberta, but across the country. If Alberta opens the door to privatization like they are doing with Bill 11, that opens the door to U.S. private insurers, hospital corporations coming into Alberta, coming into other Canadian provinces, and if the federal government does not intervene, the Canada Health Act is practically moot, and this will open the door for Saskatchewan. They've already signaled that they want to go the same direction, and so many other provinces and territories. So really right now what we're here to say is to tell the federal government you need to intervene, you need to stop Alberta's Bill 11. We heard some statements from Hedy Fry today saying that the federal government is looking at this, but we really, really need a strong voice on this, and we need them to come out publicly in force and tell Alberta to back off. We've seen the federal government really being somewhat conciliatory towards Alberta right now, and Alberta's trying to flex their muscle, but this is endangering everybody in Canada, Bill 11, so yeah, we're here to speak up and force the federal government into action.
Is there a concern of like something like this having a ripple effect within BC as well? You know, you mentioned Saskatchewan, but you know, in the province of British Columbia specifically.
Fortunately, we have, on paper, progressive government, provincial government here in BC. But BC as well is already, carrying out privatization in small ways when it comes to contracting out services. Even though they will say that the service is publicly administered, it's being privately contracted. We see things like TELUS Health. We see all sorts of corporations coming up and coming in and offering quick fix private solutions to issues that really do require public investment. So, you know, all it takes is a change of government. But we also know that, Canada and the U.S. Are part of a monumental trade agreement in NAFTA, and the U.S. is home to the largest, most powerful private health insurance lobby. So, if Alberta opens the door and they say, you can come in and you can compete in our market, those U.S. companies will come and they will demand that they should be allowed to compete in Canada. And if that happens, they will demand that they can compete not only in Alberta, but also in D.C. and elsewhere. So that's why this is so dangerous. And that's why when we say existential, we mean existential.
Next, we spoke with Dr. Rita McCracken, a family physician in Vancouver, as well as a primary care research and development lead for the School of Medicine at Simon Fraser University.
So provinces have a lot of leeway in how they run their province, and so they can go ahead and come up with whatever laws. Now, the Canada Health Act thought ahead about this, and it said that if a province starts allowing physicians to bill for medically necessary services, that the amount of money that is generated from that process will be withdrawn from federal transfer payments. So there is a built-in penalty process to stop this from going forward. And many provinces get up to 25% of their provincial budget from those federal transfer payments, so it could be a significant deterrent, but we would need to see action from the federal government to make sure that that happens.
Mm-hmm. You know, for those that are concerned about this going forward and the sort of ripple effects it could have within other provinces, what do you suggest they should or can do?
So I think that, number one, you should let your MP know, your MLA or your MP, know that public health care is important to you. The BC Health Coalition does great stuff for raising people's awareness. I'm a member of Canadian Doctors for Medicare, which is another organization that produces information, stays up on the news, reviews things. We take evidence very, very importantly. We really want to make sure that we're talking about facts and not about feelings. And I encourage everybody to try to get a little bit more information. Make sure that your follows on Instagram and TikTok are people who are actually using evidence and facts. And read the newspaper. Listen to the news. Listen to the radio.
This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.